in the article that we're going to have translated and published in Oral History Forum, you begin with the story that I've written down with Mr. Cronenberg
Yeah.
and your doubts about his reliability as a witness.
Yeah.
And you ask, is it important, at least for pedagogical purposes, whether Mr. Cronenberg had actually experienced what he told us? Was it not sufficient that he was, as you say, qualified as a professional eyewitness? And so this raises then a fundamental question
Yeah.
for not just oral historians, but for historians. Can eyewitnesses or interviewees tell us anything at all about the past? Or can we always only learn about them in the present, in which they speak to us? So this sort of.
No, I think the first question is there a difference between pedagogical aims and historical aims, of historians? Yeah. I think the most of the teachers I know are very happy if there is an eyewitness who is telling his stories, in this case about the Revolution 19, it's an old example, about the Revolution 1918, Räterepublik,
The Council's Republic.
the
Council's Republic.
Council's Republic. And I think it was in Wilhelmshaven as a sailor. He is talking about this in 20 minutes, very short and with a great emphasis. He's an old man, he was an old man in that time, and he was very accepted by the pupils. The teacher was a friend of mine, and he asked me, yes, maybe. I do not know if he experienced these events of the revolution, but he's telling about it very, very good. Yeah, and in this time he has for it, and the pupil learn about the personal view on a historical event, something. Yeah. And I asked to him, you used a book, you know a lot about this time, and you think that this view of him is the view of this book, or is it an own historical view of this person? And he said that it doesn't matter. Yeah, for me it's necessary that he is illustrating my explanations of the Revolution 1918 in Germany. And I said, maybe for you it's enough, for us not. For us it's interesting why he is lying in quote in quotes
In quotes or
in quotes
quotation marks, yeah.
in quotation. Yeah. Why does he tell us so much about it? And I know in the meantime, I think I know he's telling us a lot because he got a new identity. He was important. He was an important person. He didn't tell anything wrong because he read a lot. He had friends who were involved in the revolution, but he was a communist, and he had big hard times in Western Germany, and he was very, very pleased that in the beginning of the 80s of the 70s, he was used as an eyewitness. Yeah, but it was nothing what he had experienced for himself. So that's important for us. We have to know, we have to compare these experiences. He gives for,
Pretense.
he pretends that these experiences are his own. And I think it's necessary just for pupil to understand that the personal view on history is not only this view on these events. Yeah, it's a story about the effects of these events for himself. And if you have experiences as an interviewer, you will realize it in a time, perhaps not at once. In the time you will realize that it can't be his own. He doesn't speak, for instance, he, Herr Cronenberg, did not speak about his the effects this experience have had for him.
Mm-hmm.
Was it important to be a communist, to become a communist? Was it important for him to have this experience?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk about it. A normal communist would tell me this story more as a educational story. Why became I a communist against all those what you hear today?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? But he didn't. He gave only the same story as you can read them in the normal books, school books. Yeah? But he did it as a very serious person.
So as a teacher of that class, what would you have done?
I would have done. That's a very, very difficult question. I would have done, and I did it in another case of forced laborers. I would have asked him if he will allow us to be a little bit more critical. Yeah, and the children should learn something about historical truth, mm-hmm. not in quotes. Yeah. And that means they should ask him to find out if that what he is telling us about this story is true, in the sense of his own experience.
Mm-hmm.
If he says no, then you can't do anything. If you if he says yes, then the pupil became small historians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perhaps like criminalists?
Detectives.
Detectives, yes, thank you. Like detectives.
Mm-hmm.
And then it is much more interesting for them, even if they have not the instruments to judge about this question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is more interesting. And I didn't come in the situation with Mr. Cronenberg, but I have same experiences with other classes. And there were some Italian military interned persons. They, in the first part of the war, they fought together with the Deutsche Reichswehr. And after the dismissing after the after Mussolini was fired by the king and Badoglio, the marshal, nearly 90% of the Italian soldiers didn't join the German army, even though they knew that they would be transported to Germany as forced laborers.
Hmm.
That's real a heroical story of the Italian resistance, not the resistance what you can read about it, or about the resistance of the king and so on. They fled. They went to the Western Allies in the south of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But all the soldiers were alone and had to decide, will I be a forced laborer in the future, or will I be a normal soldier like until now?
Mm-hmm.
And they said no. Yes, they said no. And they didn't get any Wiedergutmachung, was heißt das?
Compensation.
And today they get less pensions than the other soldiers. Mm. It's an interesting question. And now they came to a school in Hagen, and the teachers had taught the pupils, that the Germans have a lot of story of exculpation. They gave a lot of help to the forced laborers. They gave Butterbrote. They gave them tobacco. and so on. A lot of help. And don't believe that was the message of the teachers. Don't believe them, because these stories are exculpation stories of the Germans, to say, oh, we have so so helpful to all those who were treated so bad by the Nazis. Now the Italian military interned persons came in 2004 to Hagen, and they said something about the help they got by the Germans, the German workers, some women, and so on. Yeah? The teachers at once said, yes, maybe, but in general you can't say it like that, and so on. Yeah? And we asked them, the historians asked these interned persons, the IMIs in the short way, we asked them how and why and by whom and so on, and were interested in. And then the pupils accompanied us. They helped us by questioning. Now, was it a real experience, or was it only for you so important because you were so hungry, because you were felt alone, or because you have a love story with this woman who gave you something? And then they found a lot. They found very different situations. They heard something about threw stones to them, or one HJ member spat in front of this IMI and called him a betrayer, because for the Germans they were betrayers in that time. And so on. They heard a lot of different things, and not only about the help, but different forms of threatenings or feelings in that time, and so on. Yeah? And always against the teachers. Yeah, and that means two things. First of all, it was funny for them to fight against the teachers by asking the real persons in front of them. Mm-hmm. And I think they liked it because they found so different things they never talked about memory. Why do you remember something? Why was it so important for you? One of these IMIs cried when he talked about the help of a girl before Christmas. He tried to get something of them, and she went down in the cellar,
cellar.
And break sausages and bread. And when he talked about that, he started to cry, and it was so important for the pupil to see subjects in history. And I think, to make it short, I think in our research there is always a main theme, and that's the question of personal changings or personal attitudes in the changing of political systems, just in Germany, but not only in Germany. If you look at Latin America, for instance, or to France, to collaboration, and in Italy, to these different systems after the war, and so on, you have all. And now in Eastern Europe, you have always the question: how does a subject, an individual, comes along with the politic, with the big politics, with the big, great politics, or how do you call it?
Big politics.
Big politics. Yeah. How came the people or an individual along with this? And especially with the political changes, the system changes. It's not only a political election and the changes. These are changes of a system. Yeah. And how did they come along? How works the remembrance, the socialization in the former times, now in the present, or in the new time? These are questions again of oral history. And there is no other source. Yeah, you have some others, but I mean the main source is here the subjective remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find it and to interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for the pupil a first smell of
a whiff of
yeah. history.
Or a sniff.
A first sniff of that, I think is uh-huh. what I mean. A first sniff of doing history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was so interesting for them, and I was so disturbed by these teachers who wouldn't allow it, because they always want to explain that's only an exculpation. Maybe, yeah, but you have to find it.
Uh-huh.
You have to look for it. You have to interpret it in a plausible way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And therefore, I would say oral history is always a very good form when the eyewitnesses are not only talking about the experience, but if they do little projects of oral history, yeah, when they have to ask people to come to this question, oh God, is this experience true, or is it only in later times a remembrance which was not built up of a real experience? And so on. Yeah? When they can do it like that, then oral history is interesting and very, very helpful in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is only a man or a woman who is talking about their experience, and you do not dare to ask them, yeah, because it's such a sacral mood. Mm. Yeah? Just if you ask, or if you hear people who had so traumatic experiences, yeah, then who would ask them, really ask them, when you are so impressed by this story?
Mm.
That's not good for historical work.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, but it's not that what I understand when people have to learn history. Or to do something to learn history. Projects, little, small projects.
Is that something that is taught in German universities?
No.
Are there seminars on oral history?
Not at all. That's a pity.
Yeah.
That's the reason why we did oral history. We teach it.
Mm-hmm.
We taught it. I think now it's not done.
And what about sort of workshops that are done maybe by sort of outside of academia?
No, it's always only in the starting phase of a project. Then sometimes we get a question: couldn't you give a lesson on oral history for this project? Or are you prepared to have a discussion with us? And so on. Then it is done like that.
Mm.
But normally teachers are not taught how to do oral history with pupil.
Mm-hmm.
They understand Mr. Cronenberg as a form of oral history.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not an oral history where you learn anything about oral history.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a story, that's all.
And what about graduate students at university who begin to do their MA theses or their dissertations?
No.
Is there anything, any place where they can go?
No.
Or do you find that they are constantly reinventing the wheel?
I think you have to read only. Mm-hmm. There are some books, essays on that, and there are some reports on projects. And you can find, for instance, my interviewer guidelines in the meantime in the internet for different projects. But there is no seminar about doing interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard it. Gabi Rosenthal did it as a sociologist, I think.
Mm-hmm.
With historical interest. I'm not sure, perhaps she is an historical, because I have to be careful, because I didn't study history, but my habilitation was on history. Therefore, I'm very careful. And my seminar in Vienna, for instance, about methods of oral history or interrogation methods in historical sciences, they told me it's the first time that they can learn it. Yeah, and it was full. They were interested, yeah, because there were nothing before and afterwards, I think, nothing again. That's a real critical point, I think, in contemporary history. There are so many people who are using interviews. Yes, sometimes they are using it only as an expert interview. They want to know how or what did you do in this situation, let's say, when the army was found in Western Germany. Yeah? A very special question, and they want to find out something about that. No life story interview, no contextualization. They have no chance to do interviews like we talked about it. And therefore, you can say it's nearly the only possibility to read and to learn from these experiences from others. But it's not taught. Oral history is not taught. Only in our institute and in Vienna and so on.
I have to go through my list of questions to see what we have talked about and what not. Yeah, I think you in this article you talk about the concept of unschärfe Relation, or the sort of the what I would translate as some sort of a relationship of being out of focus.
No, it comes from physics. From physics? Yeah.
Physics.
And it's from Heisenberg. It's an expression that you can, if you measure something, the method of measuring disturbs that what you are measuring. That's the one part of this expression, Unschärferelation. The other part of this theory is you can hold one dimension of a specific problem sharply and change the other condition or the other part, the other dimension. Yeah, and then if you hold the one part sharp and change the others, then you can perhaps come to an explanation of this development or this event you want to measure. Yeah, but you have always a relationship of unschärfe. What's that? A relationship of not being sharp. Yeah, and therefore you can have only theories about the reality of the sharpness in this middle, for instance. Yeah, and both dimensions of this expression is, in my opinion, helpful for oral history. The first dimension was the
quantitative.
The quantitative?
The way I understood it was the sort of a difference between quantitative methods and qualitative methods.
Yes, maybe. That's one possibility. But I mean, you have to be aware that our interrogation is influencing the interview. That's the one dimension of the Unschärferelation. If you have very, very sensitive situation, then your interrogation is perhaps felt as an interrogation, mm-hmm. like from the Staatssicherheit, from mm-hmm. the state security. Or I think I heard a lot of times in my life as an interviewer that an interviewer said, oh, it's nearly a repetition of my experience with the interrogation by the police. And then I have only to say, yes, but I'm not the police. I'm interested in your history, and perhaps it's important that your testimony will be alive. Yes. And then they are convinced, perhaps, to talk about that, what I'm interrogating. Mm-hmm. But only this feeling that there is perhaps the same what I'm doing with that what the police did changed totally the situation. Mm-hmm. And that's one dimension of this sentence of unscharfe Relation, the influencing the influence of the measuring methods on that what you are measuring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one dimension. And that you have to be aware. That's, for instance, the reason why I like so much the first phase of the interview. The people shall tell us, in the way they want to do it, their life story. Mm-hmm. Not structured by my questions, or not oriented, that they can want to find out a specific result. Yeah, they shouldn't know it. And the other is, indeed, qualitative. You have to look, one of our biggest problems is the generalization of some of our results. If I have an interpretation of a special person, and then I find the same patterns of his own interpretation in other interviews as well. And I think I can find some types, some patterns of explanation. Then I have a little plausibility, mm-hmm. To interpret it as a general phenomenon for a special group. For instance, the Hayot youth. Yeah, I find so many very, very similar explanations and self-explanations within this group that I'm sure that my interpretation as a pattern of working through the history, the own history as a Hayot member, HJ member,
no? Yeah, Hitler Youth, yeah.
Hitler Youth member, that this pattern has a meaning more general. Hmm. Then I have a little plausibility, not more. And then you can compare it with others who were not in the Hayot. Hmm. And then you have sharp the Hayot and the not Hayot with totally different experiences. Hmm. Yeah, and then you can compare and can say, perhaps, that the differences between these groups are based on the membership of Hayat or not. Hmm. Yeah? And this comparison is important for the generalization. Hmm. Yes? Because you have perhaps one point where the comparison allows us to see the difference as a result of, in this case, of the membership of Hayat, of the Hayat. And so on. Yeah? And therefore, you never have the security to find out a real, a general thesis about the Germans, for mm-hmm. instance. Yes, you can always only say that's for this group and for this group within my interviewees. Mm. And perhaps you can say more. I found patterns, I found types, yeah? And I think I compared it very precisely with others in the same age, with the same, they were Germans as well, totally different results. And perhaps then I can make my general theses with a security, can I say, with a certain security that this is perhaps important for the Germans as a whole, for the German youth as a whole. We have the problem of representative interviewees for a representative for a bigger group, and that's combined with this question as well. We never know. We have always younger persons for a special group than they were alive in the time we are asking for, we are looking for.
Yeah.